this truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, the world's going crazy, but in the midst of all the lunacy, we have McDonald's making a good decision to stop their support for homosexual marriage. Their vice president, Richard Ellis, McDonald's vice president, has resigned his position on the board of the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. So now that the Christians have ended their boycott, boy, I wonder if McDonald's was listening to the Bob and Your Live show on Tuesday, where we went through an entire litany of how terrible it is for a society to promote homosexuality and how devastating that is on society in so many ways, including unforeseeable ways, until a nation, a country, a culture actually takes that plunge into immorality. But now, so I don't know if McDonald's was listening to Tuesday's Bob and Your Life program, but now their VP has resigned from the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. So the Christians have ended their boycott and the homosexuals have begun theirs. So now the homosexuals will boycott McDonald's. But I don't think the company has a lot to worry about. Who eats more French fries and Big Macs? Lesbians and homosexuals or families? Who? It's not even a close call. So we're thrilled that McDonald's has ended their boycott. And if you only reserve Big Macs or Quarter Pounders or what's their fish sandwich called? A Whaler? Oh, that's the wrong store. Filet of fish. If you only reserve those for moments when your guard is down and you're weak, well, go ahead today and go to McDonald's. And let's encourage them with some of our spending dollars. Okay, now, on Wall Street, they're actually saying out loud, and this shows the insanity, and this has all come on the watch of the Republicans as far as our plunge into socialism, our plunge with the president, George W. Bush, who doesn't even know what socialism is and doesn't understand God's command, do not steal, is relevant to public economic policy. He doesn't know that. He doesn't know do not steal is relevant. They talk about whether a bailout will help or hurt. They never even consider whether it's good or bad, whether it's right or wrong. They never consider it. Sean Hannity doesn't consider it. He wouldn't know how to think about the question. Bill O'Reilly doesn't. He wouldn't know how. I mean, these guys brag that they don't know God's word, the Bible. Rush knows how to think about it. He doesn't know how to think about it. So Wall Street analysts are actually saying out loud they hope that the federal government takes over more banks. And we have this story out today, the Associated Press. White House considers ownership stakes in banks. The Bush administration is considering taking ownership stakes in various U.S. banks to deal with the severe global credit crisis. And so we have the folks who now have the authority to spend $700 billion. And as though it's not bad enough that they're going to give corporate welfare away, it's better just to give all that money away than for the federal government to own banks. You want the federal government to own plumbing companies, right? Your toilet is clogged and you get a knock on the door. Hi, we're from the federal government. We're here to help. Look, just stay out of my toilet, all right? Stay out of my toilet. What do they say? A flush, 1 gallon per flush? They're crazy. So then you have the McCain campaign. I mean, there's sheer lunacy there with McCain's plan to deal with the mortgage crisis and the subprime mortgage crisis. But wait, before we get to that, how about this? In Chicago. In Chicago, Cook County, that's Chicagoland, they've had 13,000 foreclosures. 13,000 foreclosures in the county in the past, few years? And so this is what the sheriff did there, the Cook County Sheriff, Tom Dart. He announced yesterday that he's suspending evictions. He said, we're not doing evictions anymore. And he says that's to help the renters who live in buildings, apartment complexes and homes, whatever, to protect renters who live in buildings where the mortgage is being foreclosed on. And so isn't that just great? We have a sheriff determining economic policy and writing his own law. Well, you've loaned money on a property. The property owners can't repay you. You want the people living there to be evicted because the mortgage is not being paid? And the sheriff said, no, we're not going to do that anymore here in Chicago. I mean, there is a meltdown of understanding of right and wrong, even law and order. By the way, just this little tidbit. In Iceland, you know Iceland? The government there took control of a third bank in Reykjavik, Iceland. Their government took control of the country's largest bank today, this morning, as the bank struggled, basically couldn't meet its own payroll and so on. And so the government is trying to stop an all-out collapse of their banking system in Iceland. And now that means that all three of Iceland's major banks have been taken over by the government. Now, what does John McCain want to do? Well, he understands the dangers of socialism, right? How bad socialism is. McCain is talking about giving homeowners control over their mortgages. Empower the homeowners. Let's authorize them to renegotiate their mortgages with banks based upon their lower home values. That's just great. That's brilliant. Sheer socialism, an utter rejection of God's command, do not steal. It's authorizing theft, working to undermine the integrity of America's remaining homeowners. It's not bad enough, all the people who have lost their mortgages because they got these horrendous, they got into loans they could not afford at horrendous interest rates and high closing costs. That's not enough. Now we have the people who are actually paying their mortgages who are going to be tempted to stop paying and to renegotiate. Let's go to the phones in Denver, Colorado. Jim wants to talk about yesterday's program where I debated national right to life about the Republican presidential nominee. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Great, sir.
Well, I was listening to that, and you were making your excellent point about that it's totally wrong to sacrifice the small percentage to preserve the large percentage of the unborn children.
Right.
The Holy Spirit reminded me of Jesus' words in the parable of the lost sheep in Matthew 18.
All right. Wow. Talk about that. Tell us.
And, I mean, I wanted to relay that message to you originally and let you do your pastor stuff on it because I'm not a pastor, but let me try to explain a little bit of what I'm thinking. Okay, the owner of the 100 sheep, you know, when the one sheep goes astray, he will go find that lost sheep and delight in the finding of it.
He leaves the 99 to find the one.
Yeah, the 99 that had not gone astray. And so they're secure.
Jim, you know, our culture has embodied that in the idea of one for all and all for one.
Uh-huh.
Right? One for all and all for one.
Right.
You don't agree to kill one to save a lot. You just
exactly.
don't do that.
And hey, and in that passage there, it says that God is not willing that even one little one will perish.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Bob,
all right, so we shouldn't agree to authorize the killing of one to save the many.
Exactly, that's what the Holy Spirit was telling me to call in on this because
that's called
it's not right at all to kill even one to save the many.
Yeah, Jim, that's called human sacrifice. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate that. Now, in Indiana, there is a talk show host that, in fact, we've played lengthy segment of his program some months back. He's a strong Christian pro-lifer, and he helped to expose some of the insanity in the pro-life movement. And I'm thrilled that we have on the line right now Peter Heck. And on his program, he compared Sarah Palin to Esther, that she's a modern Esther. And, you know, I recall from the book of Esther, I've taught through that. We have an album on CD through the whole book of Esther. And in chapter 8, Esther said, "If it pleases the king, let it be written to revoke the letters to annihilate the Jews in all the king's provinces." And Esther risked her own life to get before the king and make that request. So let's go back to the phone now. Peter, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Thank you so very much.
All right, so here at Bob and Yurt Live, we have been going through John McCain's record and showing that for many years, he's advocated abortion in a dozen different significant ways. But then, and for the most part, Christian pro-lifers were not really excited about John McCain. Then he chose Sarah Palin, and that all changed.
Right.
And so go ahead.
I was just going to say, at least initially, there was a great deal of excitement that a lot of people had, because you start hearing things. This lady is in favor of a complete ban on abortion, with the exception of the life of the mother, which, again, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, but that was so exciting that she's against abortion without exceptions, but that's changed now. She's changed that position. But go ahead. Go ahead.
I think right off the bat, I want to make sure that your listeners and you both know, to me, life is the most important issue. It has to be. If it's not, then what is? And
right.
I think that there is no question that John McCain's record on abortion has been, it was something that a Christian sits there and says, how could I support that? And then in the primary, it was one of those things that he was the last choice, it seemed, of all of the Republicans there. I certainly recognize that. I recognize also, and I think you do as well, Barack Obama represents the most radically pro-abortion candidate in history. This is a guy who favors the Freedom of Choice Act that's going to sweep away, according to Planned Parenthood, all of the abortion restrictions that exist in the states as they do right now, and those aren't obviously good enough. And
yeah.
So,
and Peter, Barack Obama is brutally wicked. I have here a list in front of me of John McCain's record on abortion. He rejects the right to life of the unborn. He has authorized hundreds of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers. He kills the tiniest living kids for research, for embryonic research. He rejects human life amendments throughout his career, still does, including rejecting personhood amendments. He promises judges who reject the right to life, who will say that the states can decide whether you're going to kill kids or not. And he funds surgical abortions outright. You know, not all surgical abortions, but if you add it up, it's about 150,000 kids for every 10 years that John McCain is in office that he funds their surgical abortions. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of kids killed just through surgical abortion by John McCain's current policies. Overall, millions and millions of kids John McCain authorizes, funds, advocates that we have the right to kill.
Right. I in no way, shape, or form wish to contend any of that. None of it whatsoever. So I know what your logical question is going to be. It would be what anybody is. How could a Christian go into a voting booth and press the lever for them or mark the mark for them? Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And feel you out. This is where I came, and certainly is 29 years old, feeling my way through these things. I'm not infallible, but when I'm sitting here,
Peter, thank you for saying that. And you know, people listen to Bob and Yurt Live, and they think that, you know, I think I'm infallible. We think we're infallible. Of course, that's absurd. Most
right.
people, when they're in an argument, most people think they're right when they're arguing a point. I've very rarely met someone who argues a point and they think they're wrong. But so we do tend to think we're right, even though we're not infallible, of course. But
right.
go ahead.
If I'm sitting in the White House, or if you're sitting in the White House, and a bill comes across my desk, this is what I really struggle with. A bill comes across my desk, it's passed by Congress, and it says it's going to ban all abortions with the exception of rape and incest. Now, obviously, as a pro-lifer, somebody who believes the personhood movement is the way to go, it's the loophole in Roe v. Wade. It's the obvious reality to anybody that reads that decision. I sit there and say, regardless of whether or not the dad is a criminal, the baby has still got to be protected. It has human rights. It's innocent in this case. The baby has the right to life. The question is, do you sign that piece of legislation? To me, I have to sign that piece of legislation because I'm saving, even though I'm not doing the fullest that I want to do, I'm still saving some lives. And if I can save but one, how can I not sign that legislation? Am I off in that? Would you sign it?
Okay. So, Peter, it's, you know, we tend to take this and make it into a numbers issue. It's a numbers game. You know, how many can we save? That's not the principle, how many. The principle is, do we obey God? And so God does have a standard, and he tells us we don't have the authority to sacrifice innocent people. Human sacrifice is against God's command. So if somebody asks me, Bob, will you authorize killing this one child if we will save these 99 over here? I have to say no. I have to say no. I will not authorize you killing one to save 99. Now, if I can only save one out of 100, of course I will save one. But we Christians have been sucked into a game of moral compromise where what happens is we get further and further from the goal of protecting the innocent. Every time we compromise on God's command, do not murder, more kids end up getting killed, not fewer. And I think I could show that historically.
I certainly understand exactly where you're coming from on this. It just worries me if we as Christians are going to take a stand on principle and say, okay, we're not going to vote for this guy because he's only going to save this amount and he should save them all.
Well, could I give you an example, Peter, with George W. Sure. Bush?
Sure.
The argument with Bush is, well, he only wants to kill 1%, rape and incest. That's it. So we could save 99% and then we'll come back and save those one. So South Dakota, they were going for an all-out abortion ban. And Bush was interviewed by ABC News and he refused to support it. He said, no, that's not my position. I support abortion for rape and incest. And so he refused and it came within a hair's breadth of passing. With the president's support, South Dakota's abortion ban could have passed. Now, so this is what Bush was saying. If you don't let me kill this 1%, then I'm going to let them kill all the kids. And the reason he could say that is a hard-hearted and cruel thing. And now that South Dakota has all these exceptions, you can't put more exceptions in a bill than they've packed in their current abortion regulation. Bush isn't supporting it. He's not out going to the stump and trying to pass South Dakota's exceptions abortion ban. And here's why. The exceptions are a window to their soul. The exceptions tell you they don't care if kids are killed by abortion. So John McCain, I submit, is a liar. He's not a Christian. He is pro-choice. And you know what you just said? Well, if he'd saved 99, John McCain has changed his position. He now says he will not ban abortion, except for rape and incest. He says the states could decide. So he would have an apathetic, hands-off approach. If New York wants to kill all unwanted kids, John McCain says, well, that's their right to decide to kill what? Kill Jews? Kill blacks? Kill children? Right. That's immoral.
No, and again, I think that this is what we said earlier. I do not disagree with you at all on the issue of this notion that it's federalism to allow the states to decide. It's absurd. It's preposterous. If you believe in the right to life, you believe in the right to life. There's no questions about that. To me, it still ultimately comes down to this big issue of if we as Christians don't throw three life preservers that are there to the 17 children that are drowning,
yeah,
we're only going to save three. But if we don't throw those life preservers and take a stand on principle and say, well, there should be more life preservers, essentially Barack Obama is going to come along and throw 20 more kids into the ocean, and then you're going to have whatever 20 plus 17 is. You're going to have 37 that drown.
So, Peter,
as a consequence of our inaction.
All right, so now this is not theoretical, right? Because real kids are dying.
Absolutely.
And when you advocate a law, when you vote for, when you sign a law then you bear responsibility for the behavior that law authorizes. So when you pass a law that says this child can be killed with the goal of saving these other kids, that's not theoretical. That's killing that kid by the authority of that law. So if 20 kids were drowning and they said to you, Peter, if you hold this one kid under, you drown that one kid, we'll work to save these 19. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it.
No, I get what you're saying. To me, we've got a fundamental difference here, though, in the question of passive and active participation here. We go back to that issue of where I was talking about signing the law. I don't know how I could look at you if you had a child who was a product, or if you were a child of an unwanted pregnancy, who your mother was going to abort you until I made it illegal with my signature, even though there was an exception for rape and incest.
All right, all right.
I'm still not complete, but how can I look at those that I'm not saving by signing that bill and say that that's the Christian thing to do?
Okay, first of all, it's not a numbers game, and you don't end up doing more good when you do what's wrong. So we've been fighting legalized abortion for 40 years with Christians and pro-life organizations teaching compromise on God's command, do not murder, for decades. We don't know what could have happened in America if National Right to Life and Focus on the Family and Jay Sekulow and Pat Robertson, if they would have for decades taught Christians above all honor and obey God. Honor and obey God above all. Never compromise. Never support a child killer. Never support an unrepentant child killer. If our Christian leaders would have been doing that for the last 40 years, we may have stopped abortion 30 years ago. But they've been teaching us to support, to give money and votes to people who say, I support killing X number of kids. With John McCain, the number is in the tens of millions of kids that John McCain, through his career, advocates killing. And so if you have a choice between a national socialist and a Marxist in Germany, and one or the other is going to win, right? In provinces throughout Germany, the Marxists and the Nazis, they won. So what are you going to do? You're going to vote for the Marxist against Hitler? Or are you going to vote for Hitler against the Marxist? This, you don't have to make predictions of which would be worse, you know, Stalin or Hitler. You don't need to make those predictions. All you have to do is obey God. Said God says, don't kill a child. Don't kill an innocent person. This man, this candidate wants me to put them in authority, and they say they're going to kill 50,000 kids. I'm not going to do it. It's wrong. And that's the best way to end abortion, to convince Christians don't compromise on God's enduring command.
So it is not acceptable to you for someone to sign that law into effect while simultaneously giving voice to the fact that I know that this is still condemning to death people who don't deserve to go to death. I understand that, and I'm opposed to that, but I have to save those that I can.
Well, you're actually damning countless millions you can't predict, Peter, when you are willing to authorize the killing of an innocent person. You know, God utterly condemned human sacrifice. And you know why they killed their kids, their babies in the Old Testament? Because they thought it would go better for them and their nation. That's why they did it. They offered up a child on an altar in hopes that things would go better for them. So John McCain, with all the kids he authorizes killing, and he actually funds killing hundreds of thousands of kids, if he would say, you know what, I've repented, I'm only going to kill one kid a year from now on, but he did it on an altar with a knife, one kid a year, that by pro-life logic, National Right to Life, that should make us even more comfortable. He's going to save even more kids. He's only going to kill one kid, like the high priest to Baal or Molech. He's only going to kill one kid a year. But God doesn't care. God doesn't make it into a numbers game. This is what he's concerned about. Will you obey me? As soon as we disobey God for some kind of a tactical advantage, then the devil has won. And the devil would be willing to give up all abortion if only we could all agree to authorize killing one child a year.
I think that there are a lot of Christians who are engaging in this not as a tactical move. It's because they honestly believe, and this is where I am with this example. Honestly believe that the evil that is Barack Obama is going to throw so many more children, foreign children, with our tax dollars.
During Bush's years, 1.5 million kids killed a year. When you add the chemical abortions and embryonic and all, it's, you know, it's a couple million kids a year killed during Bush. So we're going to compromise because we're afraid of the boogeyman. Peter, well, we're not to be motivated out of fear of man. Don't fear those who can kill the body, but fear him who cast body and soul into hell.
But as defenders of life, my point is, I don't know how we can sit idly by and allow someone like Barack Obama to use our tax dollars.
And Peter, do you think American Right to Life is saying sit idly by?
No, and I apologize for saying
that. That's all right.
I don't believe.
I know you don't, and I appreciate it. And look at what it's done to Sarah Palin. She said until 4 weeks ago she wanted a ban on all abortions, and now you know what she says? The states should decide. Because what happens is Christians are pulled down into the gutter, the sewer of compromising and giving government reasons why they can kill kids. Sarah Palin is there. She no longer advocates a ban on abortion. She says the state should decide. That's like Esther saying the provinces could decide whether they're going to kill Jews.
Right.
Peter, hey, we're out of time. If you'd like to talk further, Peter.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I would love to. I don't know. I enjoy talking to you and picking your brain, and I know you've got a busy schedule.
I enjoy talking to you, and I don't have the luxury of the airtime that you have. They're in Indiana.
You need to lobby those people over there.
Hey, Peter, your website, peterheck.com?
Just peterheck.com, absolutely.
peterheck.com. Peter, thank you for joining us, and
absolutely.
I'm all for talking to you again.
Okay, we'll
Let's
do it.
Let's do it
Thanks.
Soon. God bless you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
All right. Our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Sarah Palin has given up. She's yielded that. Oh, I'm against all abortion, no exceptions. Now, well, I think if New York and California want to kill kids, that's their decision. I mean, she told that to Charlie Gibson just 2 weeks ago. She said, hey, if it's a state's right to decide to kill kids. What a tragedy. Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school.